Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. We're so excited you took some time to coming out with us today. And who are we here with today? We got Chris Schmidt. How you been?
Yep, really shaking it up. Here's Chris again.
That's right. And someone we've barely had on the podcast, maybe a half dozen or, 50 times. Chad Ashley, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling good, man. Got some iced coffee this morning and had some friends over for Labor Day, did all the cool hipster stuff, played some disc golf, had some craft beer. Mm-hmm. I think we compared each other's beards. It was a real Michigan hipster outdoor day. I loved that stuff. Did you guys do anything fun?
Pretty much the same thing, only minus the beard, the disc golf, and the beer comparisons.
Oh, so man. Completely different. me and my brother played through the new Sonic Mania. There's a new retro style Sonic game, which was pretty fun.
I saw that. What is that on? Can I totally just disrupt the entire podcast and ask you a couple video game questions, Chris? Because I have a new re-engagement with some video games recently. What do you play Sonic Mania on?
They have it on Steam. It got released on Steam yesterday, and we took two. So we were playing what is a Sega game on my PC laptop on Steam, and we plugged in two Xbox controllers and used the Xbox controllers. But it's a wonderful game. It's got the super old timey vibe. You can even be playing Sonic, and you've got your player two, whose Tails plays exactly like Sonic 2 and 3.
Oh, that's awesome, with the spinning tail and everything.
Yep. He can follow you around. It's adorable.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you some PC questions, and it might be render related, but it also might be Steam video game related. Yeah.
I think video games is what's going to take Nick over to the PC. It's not going to be anything
old
else.
Retro games.
Every cool game, I'm like, oh, that'd be fun. Like I'm experimenting with some games and just I got a new interest in it. And every time I find a game, I'm like, that'll be cool to play. It's like, on Steam. I'm like, I have Steam. They're like, PC only. I'm like, dang.
Yep.
Oh man, you little cute little Mac, you. It's gonna happen. Something. All signs are pointing, and I'm getting ready for my PC, my PC life.
Wait. Shifting topics again. You've got a creepy monkey on your shelf now.
Oh yeah, is that freaking you out?
It's pretty creepy.
Where?
Here, let me grab it.
Oh, monkey shines.
So this, for those of you listening, this is one of those clapper monkeys with the cymbals. And this one was my grandma and grandpa's. And I used to be terrified at this thing. I mean, look at this thing.
I still am terrified.
It is terrifying. He is real scary, dude.
Dude, get that thing out of my face.
Dude. And now wait. It's so freaky. So I was telling it as a
terrifying monkey right now, guys.
Yeah, it's very scary. He's in a cute little outfit. And I was so scared of it. It was like a family event to pull the monkey out and terrify me when I was a kid. It's probably why
that's event. I could get behind that event.
No, it's great. Terrify the 5-year-old or whatever. And so it was up in my grandparents' closet too, where all the games were. So every time I got a board game as a kid, I had to either pretend it wasn't there and run in and run out, or I would catch eyes with this thing.
And oh my God. And it's frightening to catch eyes with, dude. The eyeballs are bugging out and they have circles around them, and they are piercing. They're piercing red, these eyes.
Yeah. They're red. And wait till you hear this thing. Hold on.
Oh my God. It's I've seen these.
Okay, oh, now listen how loud this is.
Oh my God, that's frightening.
So that's my childhood. It's probably why I am who I am, really. And anyway, so when my grandpa passed, it was only fair that they looked at this thing. They go, "That's Nick's." So it's like one of my prized possessions.
Oh, that's the actual one that they used to terrify you
with? This is the actual one from their room.
And so it's there as a reminder to keep you strong now, or what?
It does. It scares me a little bit every day, but also reminds me that, you know what? it's okay. It's going to be okay. I lived through it. And it's actually one of my favorite things. So I've been decorating my office a little bit. And my wife actually thought it was a good idea to bring this thing in. And I agree. I love this thing. So yeah, thanks for asking about my terrifying monkey, because I get to tell a story about my awesome grandma and grandpa. There you go.
Monkey shines, dude. That thing is frightening. I'll give $1 million to anybody that sneaks into Nick's office and rigs that thing to go off at random times during the day. Oh, I will seriously find a way to pay that person.
Oh, please don't. I'd bring it all back.
Well, this video.
Chad, years of therapy unwound, you know?
That's my job.
Just have him sneak in every once in a while and move it to a different spot in the office.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Dude, it's like, what do they call that? The like Christmas time, the elf on the shelf. It's the monkey on the shelf.
It's the monkey on the shelf. Oh boy. What a childhood. Anyway, yeah, this is the show. Do you think this is what people tune in for? Stories.
I think half the people tune in for this part. Half are like, come on, get to the real
time. Half of them have already skipped this
part. Half of them are, they're rapidly hitting 30 second forward until they're like, are they going to talk about anything real? Well, let's get into is there any Render Wars news?
Yes, there is, actually. There is a little bit of Render Wars news.
Oh, and also between last podcast and this podcast, R19 is now shipping.
Oh yes, that's right. That's the big news.
Yeah, so R19 is out. It is shipping, and
there's now a new renderer in the Render Wars.
It's a new renderer
officially.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think? That's a really good one for the comments. For those of you who got 19, what is your new? What's your favorite part of it so far? That'd be a cool comment. Anything else happening in news or Render Wars chat?
So the big news in the Render Wars, I think it dropped maybe, everything always drops like right after our podcast goes out, I feel like.
They wait till right after the podcast.
Yeah, and then they're like, let's drop this. So a toy announced this new thing called Render Token, which is basically using like blockchain-based currency systems like cryptocurrency type things to crowdsource rendering. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on the subject of blockchain based stuff, but the gist of it is, they want to create a system in which you can sell your computer's ability to render and earn points or earn back render time on other people's machines. So it's like a decentralized cloud rendering network for GPU, for Octane specific. Now, they don't have the best track record of actually fulfilling promises, as I'm sure many of you are aware. They tried to, I think they do have a cloud service, but it's kind of, you know, hit or miss at best. So there's a lot of people that are wondering if it's even going to happen or if it's even going to work and all this sort of thing. But we'll put a link in the description below. You can do your own research on it. I'm not particularly excited about it just because it's not, I just don't see it as something that studios are going to get behind, because the idea of throwing your client's files up onto this system where it could potentially, I mean, they got to have security measures in place somehow, but I would feel really weird about throwing my client's files up onto this crowdsourced network of machines.
Blockchain is, I'm not super up on the technology, but it seems like it's pretty robust, pretty solid tech to obscure identity and obscure all that kind of stuff. So
maybe it is. I don't know.
I could see a world where maybe not the first day they're not going to put like, you know, Finding Nemo renders up on that thing. But I think as it proves out to like, as it proves to be a robust.
That would be pretty funny though. Hey, honey, look, my machine's rendering Finding Nemo.
You want to see part three?
Look at this. This is fantastic.
So as people that are willing to test it and it works, there'll be a kind of scaling up, right? And then,
I mean, it's an interesting idea, but it's not new. Like, I feel like I've heard this idea mentioned a couple times before from varying companies that have tried to do something like this. But up until that point, you're right. There hasn't been a lot of There wasn't a lot of other things using that sort of blockchain technology. So it has grown, like the whole cryptocurrency thing, which I'm not an expert in at all, so don't ask me about it. But it has given a lot of people, it's been a good proving ground for that sort of technology. So maybe it could work. I don't know. It's interesting nonetheless, and I'll be watching it, as I'm sure everybody will. Should go check out the news stories, and he has like a little video where the CEO talks about it. But other than that, in render news, it's been pretty light. I don't think there's been anything else that I can think of right now. Everything's moving along with all of the different renderers, and people are rendering things. Buckets are dropping.
Pixels are moving. Buckets are dropping. Fans everywhere are speeding up.
Rooms are being heated. frames are being spit out. So, yes.
Oh, man. Okay, well, good. Good. Thanks for the update. And maybe we should roll into our topic. I think we've been tossing around a couple ideas, and this one came from a couple different people have been asking us questions about this, but also it just seems like there's not enough information about what we're going to talk about today. So Chad, why don't you set this one up, and then we can do what we usually do, kind of go around the room and talk about whatever it is. Let's go. What are we talking about today?
I'm excited about this topic because I think a lot of people wish they could tell other people, give other people this advice that we're going to give. And I hope that we do it justice, and I hope that we represent all the different facets of this topic. This topic kind of came out through Twitter. I had this idea. Somebody had actually mentioned the idea, or they were frustrated with freelancers in general and their lack of organization. And that kind of prompted me to tweet out this idea of this podcast, which is Name Your Shit. And it isn't really just about naming your files. It's about how can if we had a megaphone, which I think this podcast sort of is, to talk to all the freelancers in our industry, or maybe at least some of them, what would we say to them? What kind of advice could we give them to make them better freelancers for our industry, for the studios that are hiring them? And Name Your Shit is like kind of this idea of what are the big points, the big things that we can help people do that will make them a better freelancer, meaning not necessarily better at their craft, but a better employable freelancer, somebody that you want to bring back in because they did certain things the way that you wanted them to do it, or they had a good attitude or whatnot. So what are the things that we could help tell freelancers on behalf of everybody that hires them? What are the things that we could tell them to make them a better freelancer? And I think Name Your Shit is just the most obvious, because it's the one thing that I think is the easiest thing for everybody to do, but it's also the hardest, right? Because everybody says that they like to name their stuff, and they like to name their comps in After Effects, or they like to name their scene files in Cinema 4D, and then they don't, because it takes time. So that is just the tip of the iceberg of what this topic is, though, because I think it's much bigger than just naming your files. It's what can you do to make the studio that you're working for, make their lives easier.
Mm.
That's really the idea behind
it. And it's almost, it sounds like it's a little bit of how to work with other people, too. I mean, it's sometimes that, maybe I'm just talking about my history, but I learned and used software in a black hole for years, because I didn't have to collaborate with anybody. I didn't have to work with anybody. It was just me learning and playing with tutorials and making my own projects and doing schoolwork and doing my own thing. And I never had to worry about naming stuff or scene file names or talking about deadlines, like having a relationship with somebody through an email and getting my point across. And some of these other things we'll probably be talking about, but I knew I was thrown in the deep end when I started working freelance, right out of school and was really behind on that stuff. Like, I didn't know I was supposed to name all my layers in After Effects. I didn't know that Final 4 was probably not the right thing to name my scene file.
Right.
And so learning some of those things, man, I got thrown in the deep end on that stuff. So it sounds like it maybe comes from that point of view as well, which is, hey, before you go work with other people and before you go represent yourself as a freelancer or as an employee, like, you got to do way more than just make good looking renders. You got to do this, 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 and this, and this. So yeah, I like this one.
Well, yeah, I think
other than name your scene files and name your layers and name everything, what do you think another thing is that will keep them coming back and keep you hiring them as a freelancer?
Actually, Chad, I want to follow up on that. The point you're making right now about naming stuff, is that a general, is there just like a general naming scheme that you'd suggest, or is this a ask the studio what their naming scheme is and adapt to it?
I'm touching my nose because you got it right on the nose. Ask. My buddy Joe Gunn always had the saying, is like, if you don't know, ask somebody. And it's a really simple phrase, but it works on almost everything. So if I think every freelancer will have their own, if you're an organized freelancer, whether you're doing After Effects or you're an editor, you're a 3D artist, whatever it is, you're going to have probably your own way of naming things. And if you're more organized than most, then you probably have a pretty good way of naming things, but it may not be the way that the studio wants you to name it. So the first thing I tell people to do is ask and say, hey, do you have like a default scene file I should be using? Do you have a default After Effects comp? Do you have a specific way you want me to name things? Do you have that laid out? Can you email that to me? I want to make sure that the assets I'm giving you are predictable, they're easy to understand, and they're going to fit right into what you're doing without an issue. Like, that is a fantastic way to work. So yes, Chris, you were right. You get a point.
Yay.
Ask them. I know a lot of places I worked had templates. Then you they'd have a scene file, and I did more After Effects back then, but they would have an After Effects scene file, like with all the folders there. They would have even folder structure that they use internally, and they would show you where that is, and you should use this folder structure. And the way you actually name things, we didn't necessarily have a super tight way to do it, but just have it make sense. Pretend that somebody's going to open that scene file that has no clue what's going on. How can you help them navigate and find the most important parts of the scene here?
Yep.
So
yep. I think a lot of it comes down to, from the freelancer's point of view, if you ask that question, that's absolutely the right thing to do. But then if you look at it from the flip side, like from the studio point of view or the client point of view, let's just assume that it's like, I don't know, like a motion graphics studio with a producer and a creative director, and they hired a freelancer. It's the studio's responsibility to have an answer to that question. So it's their responsibility to say, well, yes, we do have a naming convention and a file structure. We're going to send that to you, and the producer will send that off to you, and you'll work from that. If they don't have those things, then it's kind of a shared blame that, if you're working for a client or a studio that doesn't have these things and they're leaving it up to you, then you have to, as the freelancer, say, okay, well, let me take a step back from my process for a minute and approach it like I don't know any of these things. I don't know what this abbreviation means. I don't know what that means. And really kind of like see if this is like something that makes sense to people. And if it doesn't, and it needs to be complex because you have like 10 shots and you've got 15 assets and you've got this and that, and you got this comp and it's going to be pre-comped into that thing, then maybe what you need is a little Google Doc that kind of like explains what things mean, so that when you send your file off, they're not like, what the hell does, you know, underscore ESH mean with underscore SH01? And if you give them a little like in the corner of a map, you know, you'd have a little guide where you could understand what symbols mean.
The legend.
Yeah, there we go. Give him a little legend. And not the fun, like, mystical kind, but like the kind.
The boring kind.
The boring kind that shows you what stuff means.
This stuff, for me was really frustrating because I hated naming things. I wanted to work as fast as I could.
Nobody says you can't do that.
My brain worked like faster than my hands could. And I was like, I just got to scramble to do this. And then on top of that, there's like a client that's asking for last minute changes and you don't want to slow down and go name everything and all this stuff. It was very, very hard for me. But then I remember opening, it wasn't even anyone else's scene file. It was my own scene file from like 2 years ago. And the client came back and they needed to update it, put some new language on it for whatever. And my own scene file, I opened it and it took me hours to get reacclimated where everything was and what layer actually meant and which ones were off. Like I thought all the layers that were off, I could just delete. Wrong. Like they were being used for masks and I forgot that. And like so many weird things that you do on the fly, you open up later and you're like, well, if I'm opening my own scene file and I'm confused, well, I must be really screwing over the person that has to go make changes on this file a year out that didn't even build the thing. So, and I was like way into like 100 pre-comps. I had like a pre-comp inside of a pre-comp inside of it.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
And I loved it. I thought I was being efficient. And in my mind, I was. But to somebody opening it, they're like, where is this file? Where is this animated? And it's really one, if you tell them, it's fine. But that was when I started going like, okay, if I can't recognize my own work, there's no chance anybody else is. I gotta step up my game here and start labeling things. I still wasn't perfect, but at least at the end of a project, I would go in knowing, okay, if somebody opens this, how do I steer them in the right direction or at least put an arrow somewhere? Like
I can't tell you how many times when I worked at various studios that an After Effects project would get unarchived, the artist that did it is no longer working there or is a freelancer, and it would take 3 or more hours to figure out what the hell was going on in this After Effects comp. And After Effects is not easy for that stuff. Like they make it really hard to actually figure out what's what. It's a really, it can be really daunting to look at a complex After Effects comp and try to decipher what was happening where. So yeah, and getting back to what you were saying about like you like to work fast and you like to just like blaze through, you can still do that. I think that's how I am. Like I preach a good game about being organized, but dude, when I'm in it, like it's just like, you know, pencil shavings are flying and like stuff's happening. And like I don't go back, I go back and organize it after the fact. Like I'll work all day, work on stuff and like, you know, just blazing through files and just craziness. Then I go back and I look at it and I'm like, okay, I gotta make this like digestible now because it's a mess. So you can work really fast. You just gotta remember to go back or save a little time at the end of the day to clean it up and make sure it's ready. And the other piece of advice I'll give is like when you're done with a job and it's shipped and it's been approved and the client's like, yep, done. Don't just like take the entire project file and throw it into an archive. Like, don't do that. Like, try, this is what we started to do. We would like go in and like if you're doing 3D, sometimes you don't even know what scene files made up the final piece because, you know, things change in the process. That shot got switched, that shot got cut. So assemble a folder of all the scene files that made up the final piece and like name them really clearly so that at any point when you unarchive that job 2 years from now, you can be like, oh yeah, that's the scene. That's the shot right there. It says shot two and it says, you know, this asset or whatever. So you can go back in and grab that, change it, put it back into the grand scheme of things and you're good to go. So do that final step when a job's about to be archived. I know the last thing you want to do when a job is done is like play with it even more because you just want to forget about it. But you'll do yourself a huge favor and everybody that's going to work at the company 3 years, 4 years down the line after you've moved up and become some awesome creative director somewhere, those people are going to thank you. Even they might not even know that you did it, but they'll thank you. They'll thank your ghost. And say, wow, this person really did their shit right. I'm sweating a lot today.
Did you have a way to do this at your job? Did you guys have a standard? But I'm realizing you might have been one of the only C4D artists, but yeah, did you have one for yourself?
I was the only one, and I was forced to improve my workflow. Even here at Grayscale Gorilla, we end up having to do some of that, where everybody had their own way of working on different plugins, and eventually it's like, no, we have to organize. And we built the software folder, and there's like the in development folder, and then there's the like beta testing folder, and the final archive folder, and then final shipped files to customers. You have to, and then legacy folder. It just, even being organized on that level was so important, because it's like, oh wait, is HDR Studio on your computer or your computer? It's like, no, it's all here.
It's all in the archive.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, what you're describing is, a lot of the stuff that we talk about here on this podcast, there's all those other side things that may not be as fun as learning more about, you know, 3D and some new feature and some new software, but it's just as important at getting work and staying working there. Like, they will remember the fact that you were more organized, or even just like I said, I wasn't freelancing when I was at Digital Kitchen, but I still had to learn that flow, and it took me a long time. It was really, really something that I had to force myself to do, because I knew it was important, but I was so bad at it. And so it's not just for freelancers. It's really even just for your own work. Man, I really wish I had stuff labeled just to find my own stuff sometimes.
Chad, for you being at a studio especially, you're going to have the most experience with freelancers, probably from both directions, actually. But to me, I'm thinking, being organized and naming your stuff, I don't think people are going to remember that you named things correctly. I think you're going to stand out like a sore thumb if you're naming things wrong. If you name it incorrectly, oh, yeah, and it's a pain in the butt to them, they're going to remember that and not call you back.
I've worked at studios where we had freelancers that we knew by name that we would be like, oh man, did such and such work on that? We got to unarchive it and try to fix it. We'd all like roll our eyes and be like, oh no. So yeah, the studios will remember you for, you know, unorganized, crappy sort of workflow stuff. As much as they'll remember you for, you know, not doing an awesome job artistically, they'll remember you for not doing an awesome job. I don't know what you call this category of work, I guess workflowy. Sure, why not? Workflowy. So if you don't have that part of your game not nailed down, they'll remember that too. And hopefully, you know, they'll still, if you're good, you're good, and they'll bring it back. But they might talk to you and be like, hey, listen, you know, last time you got us this file and we couldn't really understand what the hell was going on. Would you mind cleaning it up and maybe using this template, please? And we can kind of correct for that. But if it's remote work and we never see that person, and we never really, only the time we ever talk to them is on Slack or email or occasional phone call, and there's a higher chance that we won't bring that person back in if their work is disorganized and not easy to pick up, just because it's just, you're already outside of the loop. You didn't come into the studio, you didn't see anybody, you weren't there all week talking to people and working on the job, so you're already kind of like cuttable almost, unless you're doing really killer work. So if you don't come at it with like really good work, and also just really an easy person to work with, and this falls under that category of being easy to work with, it's not just being nice, it's being nice on the phone, nice in email, and a pleasure to work with, not only through personal communications, but also your scene files and your comps or whatever files you're delivering to your client are an extension of yourself. So if you don't approach it with that sort of mentality, then you could be on the chopping block.
Well, let's move on to the next thing. What's another thing to an attribute to have as a freelancer that called back? And you're talking about easy to work with. Are there other variables that jump into mind along those lines? Besides being organized?
Yeah, I think that there's etiquette, I think, that is not really talked about. It's hard to teach. It's hard to even sort of quantify, but there is like the freelancers that are that get a lot of work and get asked back a lot are dependable, solid, and also just really personable. And that that I think is really hard to teach because some people just, I don't know, they're just not, they don't, you have to be able to gel with the studio. If you're, especially if you're going to the studio and doing freelance work, you have to kind of be able to seamlessly kind of like, it's a hard thing to do, to immediately sit down
to the culture.
Yeah, exactly. Like immediately sit down and kind of like adapt to the situation. You have to almost be very malleable that way.
Something that, that jumps out to me, it's just, I don't know. I don't, it really rubs me the wrong way when there's somebody new and they immediately start doing presumptuous things in any kind of way where it's like, you're a new freelancer and you're sitting in this room and there's already four people in there and you're like, you know what? I'm going to go reheat my fish soup from yesterday and bring it into the room. It's like, first of all, since you've been here, nobody else has brought food in. So why do you think that's acceptable at all? And why do you think that bringing this food in is acceptable? But there's a thousand different things along those lines where...
Yeah, and you never know what's going to rub that studio the wrong way. Like, maybe that person brought that food into a million other different studios and never had a problem, but it bring it into yours and you don't like stew. So you're like, this guy's, I'm not bringing this guy back. He's bringing stinky stew into my studio.
Well, I guess my point being is it's almost
and then like, that's how you end up with the nickname Stinky Stew for the rest of your career. Yeah,
you can't shake that. You can't shake that.
It's too catchy. It's stuck.
That's good. That's a good nickname.
But it's keeping your head down just for a little bit until you get the vibe of the way these things are. Like throwing yourself out. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to name names, but there's somebody who would come in and do their yoga exercises in the room, like right over your shoulder, and you're just there creeped out. Like this person is like looking at your work and be like, oh, that's really cool. Let me stand here and like pull my leg way up in the air and do all these weird stretches while I'm talking to you. It's like, stop doing that. You're freaking me out.
Wow. You've already listed two very bizarre cases.
They know
smelly food, stinky stew, and yoga man.
I was going to say, like, I'm glad you're not naming names, but I think they know who they are at this point.
I know. I think you're a pretty vivid picture. I feel sorry for this person.
Don't feel sorry for them. Feel sorry for us that were stuck in the room.
Oh, man.
But no, I mean, that's a good point because really you're a guest there and you need to kind of act like that. So don't be presumptuous, be humble, ask questions when you don't know the answer. Don't make demands on the first day. Just try to fit into the situation, be valuable. A lot of my favorite freelancers that I've brought in over the years were people that they weren't necessarily, they were all talented, believe me, otherwise they wouldn't be there, but they weren't like these unbelievable rock stars that were like, just, you know, everything they did was amazing. Cause those people are oftentimes kind of difficult to work with. So I would, you know, say that a lot of my favorite freelancers over the years were people that were just really dependable and really fun to be around and really easy to work with and took direction and listened and didn't get frustrated when changes came down. These are the people that I would bring back.
Well, I think it's important to realize that many people that you're working with are doing this because they love what they're doing, because they like this lifestyle. They like going to work and just chilling. This isn't always the same in all cases. We understand there's many people working in different types of places, but for the most part, this is like something that people are into. They are a lot of workplaces where I've been is it's more relaxed. It is more friendly. It's more chill, right? It's jeans and t-shirts. We are all working here because of partly because of the lifestyle this is and because of how fun this can be. And if you come in and like poop in the punch bowl, man, it's like you're instantly like flagged no matter where you're working.
Man, you'd be probably arrested actually, I think, if you did that.
But even, you know, you microwave some fish, you know, same thing. It's you might as well have pooped in the.
I'm telling you right now that whether you're freelance or you're full time, if you are in an open office environment, do not cook smelly foods. Okay.
The more you don't do it. We need a PSA for this.
Dude, like that would drive me nuts. Like, and I'm, you know, I have like sensory, I'm not going to get too into it, but I'm very sensitive to smells and stuff like that. So when they would do that, and then somebody would like, it's like, dude, this is not your kitchen, you know, like don't throw a bunch of random vegetables on a tray and start cooking them in the oven. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, I don't want to smell broccoli at, you know, boiled at, you know, for all 3 hours or whatever you're doing. Like, that just is not cool.
I'm really thinking this needs to be turned into some sort of PSA moment. Like, hey, everybody, it's Chad here from Grayscale Gorilla. Just reminding you, don't use the microwave at the office.
Nobody wants that. Just don't cook smelly foods. Like, that's just like a heat up your sandwich. Yeah, you know what? Go for it. Some soup, sure. But when you start roasting vegetables, or you start cooking up some like rando, you start like literally have like a salmon fillet going or something. Like, no, dude, we're not culinary school. This is not your house. Like, just go out, get a sandwich, bring it back, eat it, go back to work. Like,
I love it.
And the other thing that made me mad,
when in doubt,
I'm going to get on a sandwich for a minute, man, because like, so studios, a lot of them are kind enough to provide food. Like, they usually have like, you know, some snacks or some beverages or whatever, cereal, what have you. What bugged me is that like, I would see people eat their breakfast there. Like, they would deliberately not eat at home and then just come in and make themselves breakfast at the office. And I'm like, what? This isn't a soup kitchen, man. Like, make your meal. Like, go home. Be a person that like eat at your house. And like, if you missed breakfast, something happened, you woke up late, whatever, sure, you know, grab yourself a bowl of cereal. But people doing it every day. And then like, even I'd see people like scrounge around for enough stuff to make something from lunch from this free stuff that's hanging around. That just bugged me, dude. Just bugged me.
This is good. I think we need a list here. So food stuff, definitely don't mess with Chad with the food stuff. That's just a vibe I'm getting right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying like, and here's the other thing. Like, if you're freelance, first of all, every time that I brought in a freelancer, I would try to get them on the lunch order, because here's my theory about that. Like, I used to get into full-blown arguments with producers about this, like actual like raising voice arguments. I'd be like, get that freelancer on the lunch order. And they'd be like, well, they're not really busy. They don't really, you know, don't need me. I'm like, are you crazy? Are you kidding me right now? Like, we're paying them a day rate. Okay, so let's break out their day rate into hours. What are we paying them for these hours? Okay, let's say it's, I don't know. Let's say it's like $100 an hour or something. I don't know, maybe less. $50, let's say. So you're telling me you're going to pay this person $50 to go out and get lunch and take that entire hour off of the books. When we could pay their lunch, they'd be sitting at their desk and continuing to work for that hour. Like, what about this is not making sense? Like, I don't understand.
Get them a $10 sandwich.
Get them a damn sandwich. Let them, they don't want to have to think about where they're going to go. Maybe they haven't even been in that neighborhood before.
Okay. Here, listen, food. I think we've we know your pain points, my pain points, and something you need. And that's really it. I think, What Chris said about listening and about understanding the culture before you do anything out of the norm is really what this is. Is like, is everybody else doing this? Okay, that you might be fine about this. So for me, it was like noise. I was big about like, you know, don't blast stuff out of your computer. Like, put some headphones on. Don't interrupt people when they have their headphones on. Like, those kind of rules.
Another big one.
I could tell you my pet peeves, but it's also like, for everyone out there, it's kind of like you need to understand who the people are in your space that have these rules and why. And it is really about just understanding, being able to understand your space, being able to adapt quickly and understand the rules of the situation. It's almost like getting dropped in the middle of a game that you don't know the rules of quite yet. But you just got to look around. You're like, okay, I'm looking around here. Nobody's touching this ball with their arms, so I'm not going to touch this ball with my arms. Okay, they're kicking it around. Okay, got it. I'm going to kick it around. And all this stuff is, it's so much a part of being around people and being called back, but it's stuff they don't teach you in school, right? Like, there's no class about this.
I feel all of these things are coming into my head right now, dude. Like,
well, let's not turn it into a big pet peeve project. What's another practical thing?
It could easily go down that fast.
That can be a podcast, but that's not what this one is. So what are some other useful things? What are some other things that freelancer can do to get called back again?
Chris is bringing us back on track. Look at that. I love it. Love it. What are some other things that they could do? I think that try to, like Nick was saying, like, you know, be malleable, fit into the culture of the company, but also just really try to befriend as many people as you can, and just become, I'll give an example. I'm not going to say names, but the person listening, he knows who he is. I brought a guy in and he was a big part of the community, went to all the events, goes to everything. And he just immediately became a part of the culture of the company, like overnight, because he was just like always there, always willing to lend a hand, always willing to help out, always willing to do whatever. And he would come to all the events and he would just show up and he'd be there and he'd be awesome. And he's always somebody to talk to. And, if you can be that person, be the person that people want to have around, you'll get asked back. Now, you don't even have to be like the most crazy, churning out the best boards and like winning all the jobs type of person. As long as you're really personable and dependable, again, just fit into the culture of the studio and become a part of it as much as you can, you'll get asked back for sure. And this person got asked back all the time. And he would just show up randomly at places that we were meeting. Like, we would go to this place that has like a arcade bar that used to be by the studio. And we'd all just be going out for a drink after dinner, or after work rather. And he would show up there and it wasn't like, oh no, there's that freelancer. It was like, oh my God, it's, you know, I'm not gonna say his name. He knows who he is. And we would all hang out. Like, be that person and you'll be asked back. Now, remotely, it's a totally different story, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm just playing devil's advocate because you're like, this is all right, but it's all stuff that isn't taught. It's almost like a personality type, or, you know, and I guess what I'm saying is there's so many artists and so many people that get into this because they like being, and somewhat they might be introverted. They want to be in front of the computer. They want to learn. They want to be in the room getting better at their craft and maybe not out talking to people all the time. So what would you say to somebody like that, that feels like, do I really have to go learn all these things and be social and figure all this stuff out? Or can't I just sit here and be good at what I do, get hired and go back home? Like, what can they think about, or how can somebody like that approach something like this?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that if you're introverted and you don't want to do the social aspects of being a freelancer, then you're going to have a hard time. And unless your like work is ridiculously good, that people are asking for you by name and asking for your work, your style, what you bring to it, I think that is a different category. But if you are as good as the person that is going in and doing all of the other things, you will not get the job over that person for sure. It's just, the reality is that you're in a, if you're going to freelance, you can't be introverted and be successful for very long, and unless, like I said, you have some unreal skill that everybody wants to have on their job. Would you not agree, or would you guys disagree?
No, I think that's not only does it make sense, that I found myself in that exact situation. And it wasn't that I wasn't personable. I knew how to talk to people, and I'm somewhat outgoing.
Somewhat outgoing.
Hello. So yeah, I busted in the room. I said, all right, just musical right when I walk in, get the orchestra. And, but what I realized was I couldn't freelance because I couldn't turn on both sides of my brain at the same time. All I wanted to do was sit there and make stuff. And I had no interest at the time, especially early in my career, in negotiating through this maze of relationships and who do I talk to and what I'm on hold for this job. And then I have to email this person, and all that stuff got in the way of what I really wanted to do, which was just sit in front of the box and learn. Everything else to me was like a distraction. So after my third freelance gig, I knew then that I was an employee. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to sit at a place that made good work and just do good work. And that's when I started looking at a full-time gig, because that fit my personality. So I'm glad you said that, because I think that is important. It is important to understand that if you do want to go down the freelance route, you do have to have these skills. You can't ignore it.
And you made a great point. Actually, I think that I didn't mean what I said to sound like, oh, you know, I'm introverted and I want to do motion design, and he just told me that I can't, because that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is freelance might not be for you. A full-time gig might be for you. Like you might be better suited, like Nick said, which is to find a studio, look for full-time positions. I mean, it might take a year or two in that freelance role and trying to like suck it up and do those things before you find that permanent spot. But that might be better suited for you. Like you said, I mean, it worked better for you. It worked better for me. Like I knew I didn't want to freelance because, number one, I wanted to be able to have some creative input over the work I was doing. And it's really hard to do that as a freelancer. So I made a choice early on in my career that I wanted to sort of climb the ranks of the studios and eventually become a CD so I could actually have some influence over the work I was creating. Hello.
I love all of you. That was
okay. awkward silence.
No, I was just seeing, Chris, yeah. What was your, did you have any interest in freelance, or were you always like, I just want to be on the bot. I want to go work here so I could play more in Cinema 4D.
I didn't have a specific plan. I mean, at the time I got my first full-time, I was already teaching Cinema 4D, but my first full-time job doing Cinema 4D, I needed to find a job. So it was more about that than anything else. And of course I just wanted to be playing around at Cinema 4D, and I found the perfect job for that. But I'm trying to think of like what else I would want to put on the list of freelancers to give them a call back. If there's anything we haven't really tackled on here yet.
Well, I think there's a lot here that is right outside of where we're trying to go with this. So like, yes, things like pricing and things like, you know, how you find your first freelance gigs. But I think this is more about, okay, you got the gig. How do you get called back? And I think
manage your time better. Manage your time. Like, that is huge. Time management is probably, if you ask any producer, from their perspective, creative, not, you know, not talking about their output, their quality of their output, but their ability to manage time, I think is huge.
Yeah. What it seems like the ability to know how long things take and to give accurate estimates and not to get caught in a web of like, oh yeah, well, this will be done tomorrow. And then it's not. That's much harder to do when you're freelance than it is when you're working there. I mean, you never want to miss a deadline, but you know, you also need to be able to look at something and go, I could do that. Or I can't do that. Like, know your limitations or know what you can learn in an evening. And tackle that project and know what you're, they're looking at you in some cases, and maybe not the artists, but the producers and the owners, they're looking at you as a paid employee to solve a very specific problem. And so you need to go in there and say, okay, this is how long this takes, and to be able to communicate that easily. So it's back to communication again, right? All these things are so important, and they're not talked enough about in art school, you know?
Yeah.
How do you communicate through email very specifically what changes are? How do you confirm through email that you are doing all these changes, or how do you navigate that stuff? So I think for me, it's this discussion opens up the door of keeping this in mind, that being good is not the test for getting the call back. There are so many other things that go into it. And the final render is only a part of that. The final render is sometimes to many people that work there, a part of it that they're not really even that concerned about. The final render is somebody else's problem. You need to make the creative director happy and make sure that final render is good. But you're also talking to potentially 5 other people in the company that are more concerned about the relationship and more concerned about the deadline and more concerned about making sure that the team likes you. So that stuff is really, that could be very tricky. So
yeah, the time stuff, man, that's just like, that's something that you're not going to ever just be able to do without years and years of doing it, because how could you possibly predict how long it's going to take you to do something when you've never done it before? So you have to, it's going to take some time to get good at that. And that's okay, because that's part of this process. It's just getting there and learning and figuring out, okay, well, I think it'll take this long. And here's a little tip for everybody out there. Under promise, over deliver. Like, that's always the motto. I don't know. I think I could probably do it in maybe a day. When you know in your head, I could probably get it done in half a day. Don't say half a day. Don't do that, because you're just basically, now you have to deliver in half a day. What if you hit a bump? So under promise, over deliver. That way, if you get it done in the half day, don't drastically over deliver, because then there's like this weird balance you have to strike. Okay. So you want to deliver a little bit sooner than they expected at a little bit better quality. Anything drastically over the line one way or the other is bad. And producers will be like, I can't trust anything this person says.
Well, now you sound like you have bad time management.
Yeah. So you have to kind of like either be dead on or a little bit better, a little bit more. And I always preferred the people that gave me a little bit more and a little bit earlier, rather than the people that were dead on and I had to change things a million times.
Well, it's time for one of Nick's wacky metaphors. So if you're playing the drinking game, get ready. Here it is. When you turn on your GPS, it tells you, and you put in the address of where you're going, it tells you how long it's going to take to get there. And most of the GPSs don't account for stoplights, stop signs, and they kind of assume you take all corners at speed and just like get to the next road at the current speed. And they do not account for slowing down, waiting for traffic or stoplights or any of that, right? And so the time that they give you is accurate in a way, but it's not actually how long this trip is going to take. You know, mentally, when you see that number and you see that we're going to get there at 3:30, that really probably means 3:45, right? Adding 10%, 20% to your trip. And that's really mentally how you have to do it. Because if you say, oh, this will take a half a day, you're probably right. But it might take a half a day on your machine, where you know where all your tools are, where you know where everything's getting saved, where you know your own workflow. And you have to account for some sort of like, oh, crap, where is that? And oh, where do I save this? Or like we started talking about, oh, what do I name this file? Now I have to go ask somebody where I put this and what I name it. You have to build all that stuff in as a freelancer, because there's so many unknowns, and you don't want to get caught saying the accurate time, which is maybe true, but is ultimately wrong because you didn't account for slowing down yeah, you know, getting for that stop sign. So there you go. There's Nick's wacky relatable
wacky metaphor.
GPS. If you're counting at home, I think JCPenney was the last one.
Recalculating.
Oh man, I need some help.
This got to be a new regular segment now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'll work a weird metaphor into anything. Let's listen. This is what having a liberal arts education is all about. Knowing enough about enough things where you can make connections and come up with dumb metaphors. It's the only reason I went to school. Well, let's do this. If we are actually helping people now, which sometimes I don't know, you let us know. Are we helping you?
I hope so.
Put it in the comments. Are there things that you've noticed as a freelancer or working with freelancers that has been either the thing that is the thorn that will never get them called back? I think putting a comment down there describing it might help somebody. Next time they decide to bring their yoga mat, they might think twice, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Write it down in the comments. And then secondarily, is there something positive too that is like, hey, we don't talk enough about this. We're always looking for other topics to discuss here on the podcast where we get topics just like this one. We'd love to hear your feedback. If you're watching here on YouTube, put it down in the comment section. If you're listening here through iTunes or anywhere else through the podcast, head on over to our blog post and we have some comments there. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, unless there's any other things we could add to it, maybe go around the table and say one more thing that could be helpful or one more thing that might be able to help the beginner freelancer or the freelancer that is maybe going like, I got the job and now why didn't they call me back? Maybe a little tip for somebody like that. And then we'll end it. Chris, do you have anything at the end here?
I don't have any good ones. So I'll just say, make sure you take a shower beforehand.
That's always good. Always good advice.
That's actually come up before. I will say when you're done with a freelance gig, send the producer an email and ask for honest feedback about how you did and what you could do better, how they felt, and make sure they understand that they can be completely honest with you.
Man, that is a really good one.
That's really good.
Yeah, I'll add to that with send the studio or the place you just finished working, not only ask for feedback, but send a card and maybe some Skittles or somebody's favorite food that you, because it is all about food at the end here. Somebody's favorite food that you noticed, send them a bag of that, a box of that, whatever they're into. Write a thank you note. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. You will be remembered and you will get the call back, hopefully, if you did good work. This is all assuming good work. We're assuming that. But on top of that, if you can send some donuts to the person that loves donuts, they're going to remember you next time. All right. With that, thank you guys so much for joining us in another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. We tend to record these on Mondays or Tuesdays. And we're just a little bit late on this one just because of the holiday. But make sure you subscribe here on YouTube if you're watching. If you're watching this long, that's awesome. You watch the whole thing. We come out with these at least about once a week, plus all the tutorials we're coming up with soon. We didn't even talk about the tutorial coming out this week. Just came out with one that's all about new animators. So make sure you go check that one out. And we'll see you in the next Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Thank you guys so much for coming by. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.